I just want to say, you did a very good job. So good job.
It's that thing where you're actually kind of smart. Things you say make you sound dumb.
Yeah, we both do that.
What's that called?
Nope.
Yeah, but you're a little different, Dad.
Stop saying sure! Oh, it drives me crazy!
Are you seeing clear? Are you seeing clear?
I think most people just ignore the tough questions. This isn't Minecraft. This is real life.
You are hilarious.
That was not the dog, Dad. That was you.
Yeah, to solve this, we have to completely ignore the main problem.
That makes literally no sense to me.
I just want to die.
And that, my friend, is one of my favorite things about you. Good morning and welcome to Renaissance Radio, where coffee beans are actually pits. And I just want to say hello to my guest today. You've heard of the great one, Harley Alibi, from the Disreputated segments we do. Hey, Harley.
That's quite the intro. Thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's the best one I've ever given you. You've been on the show about four or five times now, and hey, for some reason, I'm just like, respect you now.
Real quick, can I say something? I never noticed that you had an audio clip of you blaming the dog on a fart in your intro.
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
That's pretty innovative stuff right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's real special, and we're going to take that high road now and talk to Mr. Mannion. Joseph Mannion, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Is this your first podcast?
Absolutely.
It is. And
yes,
are you
is.
A regular podcast listener?
No, I am not.
There are nine people in the world that are, so that's yep. Okay. typically what happens with podcasts, these radio programs, is you find an interesting segment, an interesting guest, and you listen to that one. And then occasionally people who are, I feel like as I get older, I feel like I'm wasting time with music. You know, a lot of times I enjoy music. I love music. But oftentimes I'm wasting. I want my music to be doing something for me, either be worship music or getting me excited or something. And so it's nice to have some talking. I remember the transition of my dad when he was on the road switching to AM radio. And I just couldn't imagine a scenario where you would listen to guys talking. And then Harley, you're a big sports talk radio.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought. I was like, talk radio is so dumb when I was a kid, and now I listen to sports talk radio like every chance I get.
Yeah, can you imagine an existence where top 40 is how you live? I just can't. Just can't listen to it. Anyway, the reason I have these two gentlemen on, as you know, Renaissance Radio is all about artists, techies, thinkers, and craftsmen, not in that order typically, but and I want to bring people together that have similar interests. Occasionally, we'll mix it up. We'll bring a techie with a craftsman or things like that. But in this case, I have two people in my life that have a really interesting, to me, view and excitement around coffee. And this is one of those topics. Hang in there, because there's one of these topics that, like, a coffee shop, you know, every time someone tied their shoe, a coffee shop opened. There's so many things kind of floating around with it. But I think what I realized when I met these guys and began to talk to them about it is the depth of what's going on here. It's really, it's closer to like the wine culture where people are thinking of notes and types and origin and all those things. And I went, you know what? I haven't really given this a fair shake. So what would you guys say, just a quick question, what would you say percentage of population that you know anecdotally views coffee as medicinal? You know, they just drink it for the caffeine. They don't really think about it.
I think that's the bulk of coffee drinkers. I think they care about taste very little, and it's just, you know, I want a cup of black coffee, or, you know, give me something that's like super sugary and sweet. And it's, yeah, mostly a caffeine boost. I would have to say it's probably 70% of coffee drinkers.
What would you say, Joseph?
I think it's true also. I think most people are looking for a caffeine boost. And yeah. Your specific question was, how many people do I know, and what do they think? And you tend to get around with other people who are similarly minded. So,
right.
Yeah. So when you get around people who are into coffee,
now the percentage goes up because you guys cluster together.
Yeah, and you start learning what they're doing and get a better appreciation for what coffee can
What are
do.
The percentage of coffee puns as you guys get together? Do you roast each other a lot? Is there,
stop
is
it.
Is there something?
Oh,
sick,
oh God.
Sick
don't
burn.
Get started. Don't get started.
Sick burn. you know, okay. So, That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that community springs up and then you get around together. Do you also find that you're always trying to convert people? Is there some sort of recruiting, kind of occultish recruiting around coffee happening? When I talk to my essential oil friends, when I talk to my friends who do other things that have community around a product or a type, there's kind of this recruiting that happens. Podcasters? I mean, that's the same.
I don't know about you, Harley, but early on there was My start of my coffee journey, it's different than most, but once I started appreciating good coffee and started making good coffee and worked with craftsmen to make good coffee, I didn't want people to just throw sugar and milk into it. So there was a time when I would hope that people would appreciate the coffee and the effort that people put in.
I can appreciate that. I pride myself on my ability to grill, and so I, without prompting, people will give me the compliment. This is one of the best burgers I've ever had, and things like that. I had a similar experience my whole life around ketchup, where it's like I buy a prime cut of steak, I cook it to perfection. You know, maybe I even threw away a good steak or cut it into cubes for a soup or something because it just wasn't right. And so now the cost has doubled, and somebody just goes and throws a bunch of ketchup on it. And I go, you can put ketchup on Frosted Flakes. You know, it's not my steak anymore. It's ketchup. Is that kind of how you feel with the cream and sugar early on?
Early on, that's how I felt. And it ultimately, I got to the point where people are enjoying the coffee because they enjoy the coffee.
Yeah, I can relate to that 100%. I felt exactly the same way. I would roast coffee for someone. I'd make it super thoughtfully. And then I'd be like, can you just try it? And then they would try it and go, okay, but like, where's the cream and sugar?
They're like, can you not enjoy this?
And so now I'm like, you know what? Hey, whatever. Just enjoy it however you want. This is still better than the other stuff you had. Can you acknowledge that? Yeah. All right, cool. And then I backed off. So I'm with you.
There's definitely types of consumers as well, I think, is what we're talking about. And that's why one of the big chains, you know, these big chains, they do well. And I think I have a theory. I've run it by Harley a couple times, and I think he's on board with it, which is that coffee tastes bad. Okay, hang with me. It's not it's an acquired taste. It's not something you would ever give a newborn or a young person or a person who's never tried it that would go, it's not like milk chocolate. I mean, milk chocolate has that intrinsic, but I can honestly agree that you do anchor to and begin to enjoy coffee over time as a legitimate acquired taste. I don't think it's this weird placebo thing that you pretend to like it. There's certain drinks that you do clearly nobody likes. I mean, you taste it and you go, that is disgusting and will always be disgusting. Coffee's not that way. My theory is that because nobody knows what coffee tastes until they do, and they anchor on what they taste as good, that companies like the main – I want to make sure I try to keep their brand names out of it if I can. But the main companies have the ability to anchor people on coffee as good coffee, partially because of all the sugar and the cream and all that stuff that they add to it. But you're not going to like it no matter what it is, and you learn to like it. And so they have the ability to create consistency like Harley's talked about where – well, how do they create consistency?
Just burn it, man. Buy cheap beans and burn them.
Yeah, what do you think? Like, what do you mean by that?
So, you know, from what I've seen, when you roast coffee, if you want a consistent, it's hard to have consistent coffee flavors because coffee is so different. And so when you roast coffee, if you're doing it at scale, people are going to expect it to taste the same way. And so really the only way to get there is just to burn the fire out of it. And the better shops burn it a little less, the worse shops burn it more. You know, a lot of the commodity coffee that you buy in a tub is burnt and old and stale, but like, who cares?
But consistent.
Yeah.
I think Harley's onto something exactly right, where coffee is an agricultural product. So every year the product is different. So, for example, I have some direct trade relationships, and it can be the same farm, same bush, the same varietal, and each year it's a little different. If I'm a mega corporation, that's not what my consumers want. They want the consistency taste profile that they're accustomed to.
And an agricultural product, to your point, is completely counter to what you're actually getting. You know, I mean, it's the opposite of what you get out of agriculture.
Absolutely right. And the way to normalize it, which is what Harley was talking about, the further someone roasts something, the less there is of the original distinctive with the bean. So if you roast something medium or light, you can get some of the different types of varietal flavors.
I had a light roast the other day, and it really had this fruity profile. Yeah. And I enjoyed every sip. I was like, wow. And I'm somebody who just loves variety. That's my, please don't bring me the same meal. I asked the chef ad nauseum, I'm telling the audience this, but like, I asked the chef, please, whatever you're excited about off menu or on menu, what you're excited to make, that's what I want. Yep. And so this is just a segue in here, like this life of coffee where there's variety baked in is not what I had experienced. And that's actually what I enjoy. That's what I like. I like the mystery bag, so to speak, of like, maybe I can pick up the notes and that sort of thing. So that's great. So you were saying you have some direct relationships and it's an agricultural product. What are some of the thoughts you have and in general on that space, the agricultural space? What are maybe some misunderstandings people have about coffee, similar to what you just helped me realize, which is, wow, that's completely counter to create a consistent product out of a organic process is
most people don't understand or think about all the effort that goes into the cup that they enjoy every day. So the amount of work that's involved, farmers are picking on mountainsides incredible amount of coffees, beans that need to be sorted, they need to be processed. There's just an awful lot of work that goes into it.
So walk me through that. Let's not skim over that. So what? Where does this whole process start? The very, very beginning. We're not going to go into, like, we could do we may down the road and go down there and meet them and talk to them and stuff. That would be amazing. But, like, right now for today as an introductory episode with the three of us, what is the overview of the process, like you were just going over?
I won't do it justice, but, and I have gone down and met with some of them, but I won't do it justice, but you can go everything from the coffee needs to grow, and so it flowers. The coffee is a shrub. It flowers. The actual coffee bean is a seed within, or a pit, if you will, within the coffee cherry. So there's all kinds of weather that can affect whether the flowers flower on time.
I'm going to play contrarian for a moment, yeah, but I don't actually believe it. Is this really? I mean, how much does weather, soil, really? I mean, because here's the thing. Like, there's all sorts of alchemy businesses around vitamins, and now we realize, wait, you just end up urinating all the stuff out. And, you know, that sort of thing. You hear these distinct small differences, and you go, are these really making a difference? What would your answer to that be?
So there are differences, though, and not everybody appreciates them. You use the wine analogy. You know, there's I'm not a wine drinker, but I hear, you know, there's people who, there's a $10 palate and there's a $100 palate, and they're just, there's different markets, right?
I'm grateful to have a $10 palette.
And so I'll use an example. I was at one of my favorite roasters in town, and they had a specialty coffee that was a 90 plus, which was basically a $40 pound coffee, which is very expensive coffee.
Yeah, that's nice stuff.
Really nice stuff. And they served me, it was an Ethiopian, fruity flavors like you talked about. And so they served me that. Earlier in the day, I'd had a fruity flavor that was $20 a pound, still a really nice cup of coffee.
Yeah.
For me, I couldn't tell the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like,
well, your boy likes those differences. It's 20 to 90 is where I live. I like that space, so I might have to toy there. But yeah, that's interesting. So in that way, it may not make a difference.
So to tie that back in, so if my palate is at a $20 pound palate, I may not notice a difference if it was an off year, or if the elevation of the coffee is a lower elevation, or if there's some defects in the coffee. I may not taste it. Where someone who is a barista type, like Carly, and or someone who really enjoys their coffee, they may really notice it. So the differences are there, though not everybody notices or appreciates it.
Well, I think that's true in just about every space, right? Like, when you look at a line of code as a programmer, the job gets done. But when you look at it as an expert line of code, you look at that and you go, this is sloppy, this is messy, this is prone to error. But the average person would look at it and go, when I hit the button, it did the thing. I would say that's similar in art. When I look at art, people go, what do you think of this photograph? And my palette, because of my experience, is different. And the way that I rate that in my own mind versus what I actually say is based on what the person's actually asking. So that makes sense to me, because you look at it and you go, the horizon's crooked. That's number one. Like, please don't do that. Yep. If I'm talking to my 8-year-old, I'm like, that's a beautiful picture for your age. I remember getting compliments as a kid that I drew the horizon with the sky instead of drawing a line of sky and a line of ground. They were like, that's very advanced for your age. Okay, well, that passes by real fast. That's not advanced for very long, right?
It might be for me.
So yeah, exactly. But the coffee front, that makes a lot of sense to me. Like, you're, and some of the language and some of the things you're talking about, defects and elevations and all those, and I want to kick over to Harley, but those are things that I'm not even aware of. I may taste it if I knew about it. Yep. But that's why I kind of had you guys on today, because I don't know those things. What were you saying, Harley?
I was going to say, to your point, Joseph, the other thing is, if you brew the coffee wrong, then you don't even have a chance to taste those different flavors too. And so something as simple as a grinder, you know, I know you brought your Brazza here, can make just a substantial difference in what flavor you're getting out of a coffee. And I don't think the average consumer can gets that until you experience it. Because it's like, I'm grinding beans. Like, I don't understand. What do you mean? It can't matter that much.
Everything's stupid in its simplest form. So, you know what I mean? Like, art is just, you know, a recreation of a moment. You know, coffee is just bean water. You know, but everything is, when you don't explain it well, everything is stupid. I would say that I can step into that role that you were speaking of, Harley, which is the average consumer. If you don't mind, let's do a table of contents of, let's follow the bean. So let's go all the way through the process here. You mentioned a grinder. So basically, let's start at the agricultural front. How do we decide? We've got a field here, and we'll stay high level. We won't go too deep, but we've got a field here, and they decide to put coffee. Is it a tree or a bush or shrub? What is it?
It's a shrub.
It's a shrub. So they plant that. They have to choose the right, would you say, elevation?
They have to pick the right cultivar. So it'll depend upon the elevation. So at a lower elevation, there's more disease. There's more other things. So they might plant a Robusta. They might plant something else that's more disease resistant. Most of the coffees we enjoy here in the United States are Arabica or higher elevation beans. And so if I'm a farmer, first, your great question. What is the most profitable thing I can grow? Is it easier for me to grow tomatoes or papaya or coffee?
That's true. You've got the soil.
Yeah.
Build, put something in that there's demand.
Yeah. So if someone is fortunate enough to own a plot of land at a higher elevation, then they might want to plant a coffee shrub. And they do. And a lot of it's subsistence farming. They grow their crop. They might actually put it at the end of their patch, and people come by and buy it. And it's what they live off of. A lot of very smallhold farmers are what produce most coffee.
Similar to like having a lemon tree and living off the lemon tree, or having a goat and living off of the milk and the kids. So yeah. Wow. Okay. So they have to choose the right area. Man, I would love, wouldn't that be a fun trip?
It'd be a blast. Yeah.
Can you get us down there sometime?
We can.
Okay. Well, let's think about that, because cool. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah. Let's drive.
We would need to,
it's an adventure. I'll put
it. Yeah. Yeah. We would need to probably take Danny is my guess.
Okay.
But anyway, okay. So it's hard because I'm trying to stay high level, but everything you're saying is so interesting. So, like, I need to just go with you on this. This is great. So they get the bean, and then they – well, here's the thing. We heard this. Tell me if this is true. We heard that the bean thing was actually because the cost of beans on the chart was lower than the cost of fruit. And so they named – they called it a coffee bean to trick the farmers into a lower rate.
I hadn't heard that.
Because it's not
a bean. I'm learning something.
Well, it's not a bean, is it?
It's not a bean. No,
not
it's
a bean
at all. It's a seed. Go ahead, Harley.
Oh, I don't have as much to say as you do on this topic, Joseph. It's just, Jeremy and I love talking about the economics of that kind of stuff. And so the fact that, you know, when coffee was starting to become a commodity in America, that they were like, hey, it's a bean. So it looks kind of like a bean, right? Like when you look at it. Yeah. So we're going to pay you less.
And throw away the fruit.
And it worked.
Yeah.
And, that's just always bizarre to think about.
It's like, the cost of apples is high, but the cost of seeds isn't. So we're going to throw the apples out, and we're going to buy it as a seed. We don't need this shell. It's not a shell. It's a stinking fruit. It's not just the shell. You know, acting like the cherry was packaging for the actual bean is clever and dishonest. Shame on them, but they saved a lot of money. So what happens then? They're in there. They've kind of got the right scenario, like you talked about. They've got the right elevation and some of the other big words you used. And then, and then they they pick them, or they shake them, or what do they do?
Great question. So it depends on where they are. So in Brazil, for example, which is an exception, Brazil's an exception, the lower elevation, they're able to do some mechanized picking.
Yeah.
So they can have machines go through. And
is that AI type stuff, or is it just a scraper? It's just going through and kind of scraping out the beet, you know, the
most of the people you will encounter at agriculture are not as high tech as you would think. They're not AI.
It's just intelligence.
It's eye picking a bean. Yes. Yeah. For example, Brazil, their lower elevation, more sloping, so they're able to mechanize their process. And they're able to get some decent coffees at a lower cost. If you go to some of the places where Harley's coffees would come from for his roaster, if you go to high mountains of Central America or Africa, these are usually steep mountain terrains which are hand-picked. It's incredibly...
what a life.
Dangerous, difficult, and they don't get paid much at all.
So here's my question to you guys. I'm going to take a sidebar here for a moment because I'm having an ethical dilemma here on this as I hear it. We don't provide employment to kids who work in sweatshops when we buy their clothes, right? Like we're not supporting their employment. We're exploiting the kids. So in your experience, you've been there, right?
I've been there.
Yeah.
Yes.
In your experience, are we exploiting them or are we enabling them? Because we've described a very difficult life here.
Great question. I've been to Origin a couple times. I've not been there when they are picking, so yeah. I've not experienced
that.
But
you've met the people, and they're going to communicate with you. They're going to communicate, thank you for the work, or here's my overlord. You know, like you're going to know that when you go there, right?
Yeah. So for them, life is very difficult. They don't make a lot of money. Life is very difficult. They get paid usually minimal amount. A lot of the times it's subsistence farming. Oftentimes,
subsistence meaning just enough to keep you alive.
is and sometimes it's barely. Sometimes there's a whole concept of coyotes where they're meaning these are basically loan sharks who will take their crop. If you sell them their
bowl of soup, basically.
Well, basically, if I grow my coffee and I run out of funds 2/3 of the way through the year, I sell my next crop, and so
no guarantee that that crop's going to bail you out. So now you're in that gambling. You're betting against.
Or they pay me a little bit of money for the future crop, and then I run out of money 2/3 of the way through the next year, and so I'm continually stuck in
now
that
in the
cycle
US,
of
we have
debt.
Insurance for that. Like our farmers, I don't know if you guys know this, but like our farmers in the U.S. are insured for a certain level of loss. And so they're guaranteed a certain amount of revenue that year through their insurance that they pay.
They definitely don't have access to that. And we also have laws against loan sharking, which is basically what happens. Yeah, These people are charged an exorbitant amount of money, yes, for a lot of what they do.
What's the answer? I mean, how have you landed on that? I mean, you love these people. You care about these people. You advocate for these people. I mean, that's a pretty direct question, right? Like, are we exploiting them by the work that we're doing? Are we trying to pull them out? What's going on?
That's actually a dilemma, that an issue that our industry has faced for a long time. So there are organizations that will go in and pay minimal amount. And so they'll pay a minimal amount, and there's the C cost, not to get too detailed, there's C cost, the commodity cost for coffee, and organizations will buy shiploads worth of coffee for a certain amount of money. Most of the coffees that Harley and I will be talking about are more specialized coffees where they are top 10% or so of the commodity. More and more direct trade is involved. You heard about fair trade. Fair trade, and so fair trade in Honduras, I'll pick a country, Honduras, fair trade's $1.40 a pound. So we get a coffee that has a certain amount of quality to it. They get a guaranteed price of $1.40, which is usually 30% higher than what they normally make. So now, that's a great step in the right direction.
My wife has a shoe company that she went down and she basically said, hey, you folks make this. We're going to make enough to make a living. And then this is going to go to the ladies there who are in direct poverty and those sort of things. And so that direct trade, fair trade is a huge thing. I remember with HH Boogie, the company that we created, we sold a few years back. The shop owners were, the goal was for my Amish friends, their goal is to work from home. And they call it working away when you have to. And it's hard when you have to work away as an adult, because as an older person, you want to be able to have your own shop and you want to be home and your shop is next door and all that. And frankly, that's kind of our goals too, right? I'm sure all of us want to work home. We don't want to work away. But that's life. You know, we're grateful for the provision. And so HH Boogie was that kind of thing where we didn't get rich from it, but we were part of something. We got paid, and each of the craftsmen were able to work home and open their own shops and be home with their kids. One of the parents was disabled. One of the parents' kids had a disability, so he was able to come home. Son was able to come home. It's just such a cool experience to be able to directly affect these folks, but it's just either happening or it's not. You know, when you support these shops, like when you support these pickers and stuff, they're either being exploited or their life is getting better. It's hard to find an in-between there.
Yeah, so to answer your question differently, so a lot of these farmers are glad to just get paid, even if it's whatever amount. They need
to be out of the shark business, to be
out of
the
loans. Take care of the shark year one and then to figure out how to do something later. So that's kind of where in our industry, there's a whole talk about sustainability and the cost of coffee being too inexpensive for what we get, and it's all valid. In my efforts, I don't try to solve the entire world problem, but in the direct trade relationships that I have, I try to establish what I'll call a quality benchmark. So I never pay C price at all.
What's the name of your business?
Serve Coffee.
Serve Coffee. That's right. We're going to support that for sure. I know Harley has Meaningful Coffee. We have Serve Coffee. We'll definitely have a shop. We'll figure out how to get that out, and we'll do direct trade with you guys, Renaissance Will. Make sure your families are supported.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah.
And also, if you don't sell a lot, I can give you a loan. And
oh, thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, and it might get me through 2/3 of the year.
By being a day. So you're working with them to you don't pay C pricing.
No. So what I'll do is I'll establish a quality matrix. So which is it's multiples of fair trade. So and frankly, the coffees that I'm dealing with are usually very good. So not to get too detailed, but on a specialty scale, anything over an 80 is a good score.
What's the rating there? What's it made of? Harley, do you know that 6 scale?
I use it when I shop, but yeah. I don't know the details. So,
Joseph, can you walk us through like the basics of that? Like, I know it's a lot, but maybe the headers of those of the rating.
So specialty coffee is the top 10-ish% of all coffee, and so it's highest quality coffee, and it's a score of 80 or higher. So when my daughter and I visited El Salvador, we visited the coffee council there, and there were people there whose job it was to cup the coffee. If the farmer's coffee was 79.9, it stayed in country. If it was 80 or higher, it was out of country. It could be exported.
It's like a hard admissions grade system at a college or something.
Correct.
It's like if you're not 3.8, you're out.
Correct. And for their from their standpoint, it's not only competitive with for the farmers, it's competitive by country. El Salvador wants to be known as a great coffee origin, so they want their coffee to meet a certain
100% of their exports are and above.
Yes. So that score of 80 is a good score. To get out of the country is a good score. On the national competitions, there's something called Cup of Excellence. And so these are competitions where price is so low, an organization was formed, ACE, that would reward quality. So they get the top 24 or so farmers in a country. They do a competition. They grade the coffee, and then there's an auction. So that coffee, instead of going for $1.20 a pound-ish, might go for $15. The highest one went for $300 a pound. There's some really high score coffees in the
those industries have that kind of elite. Like I have $300 coffee. Yeah. Harley, do you mind grabbing out of the third or fourth drawer there USB-C for the computer?
And so back to the scale. So on specialties, 80. For most of the Cup of Excellence starting scores are 86. So we might think, oh well, I need a 90 plus. 90s a true 90 is really, really, really rare.
Do they push grade ever? Like, are there people that say they're 90s and you go, come on.
There's inflation, grade inflation, yes. Yeah. So, absolutely.
What a game.
Yep.
We're in the grade, but it's real money. I mean, it's like you get yourself to a 90. There's a lot of incentive to lie about it.
Yes. And that's why there's third party testing. Each country has their own testing lab or quality control lab that will grade their coffee. So, again, the whole point to say 80 is a great coffee, 80 is a good coffee. Top 10% is the specialty grade. Anything over an 85 is really a whole different classification. And a lot of the Cup of Excellence scores, starting scores, are about an 86 anymore.
Wow.
And occasionally get above 90, occasionally.
So people, so average consumer. So first of all, we're going to go over some of that and maybe give you a chance to write up a blog post or something and put on our site about your stuff. We've got, if I oversimplify, we've got two categories here. We've got the people like me who would like to get into good coffee. I don't want to overconsume. I don't want to drink gallons of the stuff. I'd like to get into good coffee. That's what I want to drink. I want to drink good stuff. So I want to know about how do I know what I'm drinking is good. And I also love the story, the buildup. When the chef comes out to the table and says, hey, thank you so much for ordering off menu. I want to talk to you about what I made for you. That story has value. The education and the understanding of what you're about to consume creates value. So I love that. Now, for the average consumer, why don't you fight off the feeling from them that they may be having, which is this isn't for me because I don't like it. Like, not that I don't like it, but I can't yet tell the difference. Why would they buy an 80 plus from you versus just grabbing a can that their grandpa used when he worked on the car?
And of course,
a legit answer is they can. They can buy that. That's fine. That's okay. Yep. None of us are mad at you. Yeah. but why would they maybe start moving that way?
Okay. So
and Harley, feel free to jump in as well.
Yep. Yeah, I think the main thing is I don't know that there are many things that we consume that are so different with just a couple changes. So from the quality of the bean that you purchase to the way that it's roasted and then to the way that it's brewed, you can dramatically change the flavors that you get, the quality of the cup that you have. And so I think that's what it really is. The first time I experienced good coffee was just like a decent bean in a French press. And I was like, whoa, this is way different than anything I've ever had. What happened? And then I continued to make those changes and those tweaks. And I discovered this whole world that I didn't know existed. And I was fascinated by that. And so I think the average person will realize that like coffee isn't supposed to make your face pucker when you drink it. That's just bad coffee. Good coffee is still bitter, but it's deliciously bitter. Like it's truly a delicious flavor on its own, and it's not nearly as much of an acquired taste because it genuinely does taste good.
Yeah, I had that light stuff from you, and it was so disorienting because it didn't fight me. It was like the weirdest feeling to not like regret the sip. Like, I always thought that was part of drinking coffee, was like the 7 to 8 seconds of just sadness that comes after the sip. You get that gross taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
And you're saying that's actually been hijacked. That's not actually what coffee is supposed to. Coffee is not supposed to punish you, Harley. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a high quality bean and it's brewed well, then you will drink it black, and most likely you'll enjoy it at least more than you would otherwise, right? Like, my wife doesn't do bitter flavors at all. So for her, it's a stretch. But, you know, Jeremy, you noticed that you didn't need to put sugar in that brew because it was naturally sweet. And you'll see that with coffee.
On some. And then some have other profiles as well.
When you describe the 8 seconds of bitterness, I think of truck stop coffee. So that's
a great example.
That's not the 80 plus coffee at all. That would be maybe
wine's that way. Wine is not pleasant as it gets better. Coffee actually, I'm gonna butcher it here, but it's not like tea, but it's closer. You go, oh, this is, you know, when you drink bad truck stop coffee, you get that same vibe you get when you drink an energy drink, where you're like, this is bad for me, but it's gonna make me feel a certain way. But tea, you know, when you drink tea, you're not fighting it. It's just this smooth thing, whether you like it or not. The coffee that I've had from you guys has that quality where it's like, I'm appreciating the flavor now. And frankly, it's a little disorienting because I'm looking for that kick. And I'm like, is something wrong with this coffee?
No, you hit exactly right. So I'll use the phrase truck stop coffee.
Yeah.
The heat usually hides how bad it really is.
Yeah.
So you drink it warm and you kind of go, okay, I kind of taste coffee here. And then as it starts to cool, it gets very bitter. And then you drop half of it on the parking lot, on the pavement, because you can't drink it because it's so bitter. Because it's reached room temperature and you taste what it's really like and you don't like it.
Yeah.
For high-end coffee, the flavors change over time. So when it's hot, it'll taste a certain way. But it'll change, and really good coffee will taste good at room temperature.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
That's crazy. Now, I don't know. Are you aware of the Ember Mug?
No.
So Harley and I are huge fans of this. I think I was an early adopter here. The Ember Mug is a temperature-controlled mug. Now, they have heated pads that they put underneath regular mugs, but this is different. That mug right there, that actually you set on your smartphone, you set the exact temperature you want, 139 degrees. It'll stay there. And as long as it's on the pad or for up to 2 hours off of the pad. So one of the things I noticed with coffee was I just didn't enjoy the experience. And so I was burning my mouth and then waiting. And then I had to chug it when it was the right temperature because 10 seconds later it was too cold. And again, it wasn't good, like you said. Yep. So I didn't have a chance to enjoy it because cold, bad coffee is disgusting. And so, like you said, the heat hides it. So in this case, I've been able to really enjoy coffee more because I can sip on it over the period of a couple hours, which is super a weird experience if you've been drinking coffee for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Yeah, so 139, 141, 128, whatever your temperature is, you set it and you leave it.
That's the first time I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's called Ember Mug.
Yeah, they're pretty nice.
Yep.
I had one. I traded it for a coat.
With me. Yeah. I'm kind of in the coat biz, you know? So, yeah, so that's incredible. So what next? So the beans are thoughtfully, you know, we've kind of gone through sourcing a little bit. We've gone through some of the...
Joseph, do you want to talk a little bit about the, you know, kind of the process of washing the coffee or...
Oh, good question,
You know, that process, I think that's, you know, an interesting distinction.
Yes, I'll talk a little bit about it because there are any number of different ways to process coffee. So what do I mean by that? So there's one process to get the bean out of the fruit that we talked about earlier, right? So it comes off the shrub as a coffee cherry. It's red, mucilage on it. They need to figure out, there's one process to get the mucilage, there's a requirement to get the mucilage off of the pit or the bean. And that happens a number of different ways. So in Africa, initially, they would just throw it on the ground. And it would be the natural process. They put it in the sun and let it just
crackle and not rot, but just kind of
the
fall
fruit
off.
Would dry, kind of like a raisin, yeah. Right? And they'd have to move it, etc. But they would just throw it on the ground. That was a more of a natural process. where there's a lot of water in Central America, there'd be a washed process where they would remove the extra pulp via water. That's a wash process. Most of us in the U.S. are familiar with, we're used to a wash process. Central American coffee is easier to get here than Africans. They're cheaper, and we're used to Central American washed. And that's been the typical way to do it. Lately, to show differentiation, there's been any number of different ways to take that process to get different taste characteristics. So some specialty places will still will dry it on a patio. They'll wash it and get the mucilage off. There's still parchment on the bean that needs to be taken care of later, but they will either put it on a patio to dry. Some will keep it on African-raised beds. And some people will now will borrow from the wine industry and do some anaerobic processing in water. So there's all kinds of different ways to get different taste profiles. And so in general, it's how do they keep some of the fruity flavors that they're losing by removing the cherry, by keeping that on the bean to keep some of that flavor in the bean. But there's a lot of ways to do it. I'm not an expert on it. And some of those processes are very expensive.
I think you passed the minimum threshold for understanding there.
It's amazing how different the coffee will taste depending on how it's processed. So, I mean, just between drying it in the sun, washing it in water, you can take the same bean, it'll taste totally different. So, super interesting.
Yeah, for sure. So you process it and then you package it. And I would imagine something like this, especially with a flavor profile, that storage is probably really important. Wouldn't you think?
Yes. So it's,
am I like stumbling onto like a huge topic? No,
it's a huge topic on two sides. So I import coffee. So for me, storage is a big deal because coffee, once it's processed, the green bean is somewhat like a sponge, meaning if it's just in a burlap bag and it's at, in a Central American location, it can start to get more moisture. It can start to rot. If they happen to ship it with petroleum products, which they never do, but it starts to take on some of the flavors around it. On the other side of the scale, there are people who will put the green bean in an old bourbon barrel so it absorbs some bourbon flavor and roast it. So with that idea, storage makes a big difference. So
So I imagine burning the beans, as we described earlier, as Harley described earlier, protects from that as well. It's another commodity tactic. It's not absorbing. A burnt bean is not absorbing a bunch of odors and stuff, I would imagine.
No, but that's part of the roasting process. So, so to me, storage takes on two forms. One is most of the higher-end beans will come in something called, it's basically a big glorified Ziploc bag.
Oh,
they'll line the burlap bag with a EcoPro or GrainPro bag, which keeps them, so once they process the bean, I didn't talk about drying it. They'll dry it to a certain moisture level, the bean to a certain moisture level, so that it retains both the flavor and then it stores optimally. So when I bring a bean in, it's 10.5%, 11% moisture level within the green bean.
Kind of a humidor type vibe, like you're wanting to keep that.
It's still alive, but you don't. If it's too moist, it'll rot, or it won't store as long.
There's so many failure points, Harley. I think that's what you were talking about. Is like, to get this right, it's such a special thing. By the time it gets to your house, there's just so many ways for it to have gone wrong.
Yeah, and then we feel weird about paying $4 for a cup. It's like, oh my gosh, dude.
What's funny is we don't feel weird for paying $4 for the burnt stuff.
Well, yeah, right. Like, you know, Starbucks has helped re-anchor coffee prices. But like, if you were to just say, hey man, do you want a cup of coffee? It's $5. I think the average consumer is going to be like,
Yeah.
But like, if you just think about what Joseph has described, I mean, we haven't even gotten to the other half of the process yet.
Yeah. If there was a random stick, like a random stick, okay, and it started where the coffee started, and there was just this random stick, and someone took they literally just looked at the stick, grabbed it, and then went through what the coffee bean goes through to bring it to you.
Took it from a mountain.
Just a stick. And it has to get dried and it has to whatever, and then the stick shows up at your house and they go, this was $5, let me tell you how it got here. You'd go, $5? You know what I mean? You would go, this is $100, this is $1,000, this is $10,000.
Yeah.
Yep. And you're right, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense how they do it. Okay, so then what? What part of the process are we in now? I'm riveted.
So, you know, at this point we've got green coffee beans that have been transferred and shipped to some kind of supplier. Joseph does that. And then typically, you will either sell that to a roaster, you might roast it yourself, and then that coffee gets roasted. And this is the last step before the coffee is ready to be brewed. And so there are roasting at, you know, large scale, which is what you'd see at, you know, a coffee shop. They've got these big, large scale roasters that are still considered small batch when you look at the commodity space.
Oh, so it's not coming to you roasted usually at this stage at this quality.
No, not in our world.
What was that face, Joseph? Why was that? Why would you never do that?
So for quality,
for the YouTube audience, he went
yeah,
like
so,
this.
Yeah, so yes, so quality coffee has to do with freshness. So it's like when you roast a piece of bread or a loaf of bread, you want it fresh out of the oven. When you you barbecue, you don't like it having been in the refrigerator for who knows how long, and then put it in the microwave
the
later.
Is flash frozen with seafood. Everything else you want very very
very
recent,
very fresh, very very, very fresh. So a large scale. If I had to supply tens of thousands of grocery stores with cans of coffee, then I would bring in boatloads of coffee, flash roast them in an industrial roaster and put them in a can. So that's one level of roasting, and it meets a certain profile. To be able to take a basically quantity 50 coffee, an average coffee, and make it palatable for people, is there's a certain skill associated with that.
Yeah,
right?
That's a good
point. So, but the coffees that Harley and I are talking about are the ones that are top 10%. So in those coffees, they are typically treated differently. So they're roasted differently. Harley's talking about small batch. So you most of the consumers...
These aren't remotely the same, I guess is what I'm realizing when I listen to you guys. When you talk about large commodity 50 coffee, not the same process, not the same people, not the same taste profile, there is very little left that is similar to what you guys are talking about. It's the antithesis.
Correct. I once had an importer say, well, what happens to the coffee where the petroleum and whatever does mix? It's that there's a market for every coffee. Like prisons, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, so, but on the scale we're talking about, the other end of the spectrum where these are specialty coffees.
I'm trying to draw a parallel to another business to this. Sorry to interrupt you there. I'm just trying to figure out anything else that like two completely separate process, like they're at war with one another almost, and they both are called coffee. I just can't think of anything that's like that. I don't know, Harley, can you think of any sort of business model? Normally, I'm the one that quickly draws this association, but I can't think of any business where the two things are called the same thing, and by the time they get to the cup, the average consumer goes, yeah, that's generally the same. And sure enough, they're completely different in every way. Everything.
Yeah.
You go, oh, you should slow roast it? Let's fast roast it. You should roast it later and keep it fresh? No, let's roast it now. Oh, you should store it? And it's completely the opposite. I'll be right back. Keep talking.
Yeah, there might be other food-related items that would fall into that category. You know, you might be able to make that argument with, like, a Wagyu beef compared to the average steak you buy at Walmart, but that's the best I can do when it comes to that kind of difference. I think that's a really interesting point.
Yeah. So, I think the point you also brought up earlier about just that there's a whole different failure process once the process gets to the consumer, right? So, the farmer may have spent all the time to produce the stick, as was mentioned, but once it gets to our hands, we can take what's been very carefully created and masterfully produced and do some bad things with it.
Yeah.
So, is it worth $4 to go to the expert barista at the corner who's got the $1,000 piece of equipment and the best grinder? The experience there is different than what most people experience at home. Doesn't have to be, but it is.
Yeah.
But there's the value that is created on that side of the equation on the actual roast after roasting, but actually brewing the coffee does have a different experience, right? A different sensory reality or experience that people would have otherwise, and it's. That's where you see a lot of difference, right? On that side of the...
Yeah, I got into coffee roasting and I don't know, by happenstance. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have, but now I'm in and I just can't get out. So I started roasting coffee in a popcorn popper, an air popper, which is how a lot of coffee roasters start. And then I needed to roast more, so I started doing a Whirly Pop after that. And now I have a Benmore, and so I've been able to get, like, a legitimate roaster that's been, like, a world difference. It's been amazing just what that has done. And then I was using, when I would brew coffee, I was using a pretty bad grinder, and I just got Fellow Ode, which is a burr grinder, And so I was really excited about that. And just these small changes, this has been the story of coffee for me. Just these little changes go so far when it comes to the quality of the cup that you get.
Which you kind of laughed about using a Whirly Pop and things like that. But that reminds me of just about every process where it's like, I don't know, programming or art or, you know, consulting or things like that. There's well-established norms, but there's a moment when you step out and you go, I'm going to participate in this the best that I can, and I'm going to take control of each step of the process. And it feels like you're being dumb because you're like, I can just go buy the coffee here, and I'm using this tool that's not really made for that. But that's what starting looks like on anything. Like, whenever you start a new thing, it's go ahead, Joseph. What
yeah, was I that? Only laughed because I almost brought one. A popcorn popper to say it's possible. And so the great thing from a coffee standpoint is that most of us are cost conscious, right? And so the $4 cup of coffee at a cafe is worth it. The people who put in the time, it's created in such a way, the experience there is going to be different than it will be at home. However, Harley talked about the cost structure. If we go, I'll mention the K-Cup, right? There's a certain genius to the K-Cup in that all the variables are the same. You can't get a K-Cup wrong. You slap it in the machine, you hit a button, the dosing's
the same. Problematic in so many ways, except for one, convenience.
It's convenient and it's consistent. That's the consistency is the genius of it. Yep. So, for those who want the different
experience. It's not sustainable. We're creating incredible amounts of plastic waste.
That wasn't
it's
what I was saying.
It's manufactured like terribly. You know, there's all these terrible things that are happening. And the quality's terrible and all those things. But convenience wins, which tells you something.
And it's also very consistent. And I'm not advocating it. I don't own K-Cup. I don't buy K-Cup. I don't sell K-Cups. I like anything about them. However, the genius, besides a cost, is that it also removes all the variables that Harley was talking about. If Harley produces a great coffee, roasts a great coffee, I now have it. How many things can possibly go wrong? I can let it sit in my closet in my pantry for a year
or
I can put it in the freezer. I can store it wrong. Back to topic you brought up earlier. I can then bring it out and grind it at a level that's different than the brew method I use. I can use the wrong amount. There's all kinds of things that I can do to make what was a very good coffee very bad. And unfortunately, K-Cup normalizes all that. It's all pre-dosed. The water's a certain temperature. You push a button.
That's where I think technology makes a lot of sense because we now have, and I'm going to show my ignorance here, but I'll be getting a thermostat-controlled electric kettle here soon so that my water temperature will be the same. We're going to have a waffy temperature?
Yeah, your waffy. Your temperature. Waffle temperature.
That's going to be a T-shirt. Waffy temperature. But here's the thing. Like, I can supplement some of those things in the you know, Harley, how much was the Whirly Pop? How much did that run you?
I picked up the one that I use now at a thrift store for $5.
Which is about right. You can do that. That's not rare, right? Like, you didn't have the super find of the world.
No.
People can go out and find Whirly Pops.
It took me a couple trips, but
how much was the next one? The one you got now?
The one I have now, I got used for $250.
Okay, so we're talking some jumps there, but what did it solve for you?
Well, it allowed me to roast at larger amounts with a much more consistent outcome.
Yep.
And on top of that, I think I get better flavors.
This is the world, and I'm gonna digress for just a second. But as the listeners who are maybe thinking like of starting something, a lot of my target listeners are starting something. They're stuck. They've been stuck in a weird spot. Tools and technology are not the answer. The answer is understanding and clarity and knowing what to do next. But if your entire fight is getting the temperature right and there's a piece of tech that normalizes that temperature, you can skip the K-Cup and you can go to that $250 machine. Now, the K-Cup thing, you're going to pay for each of those servings. You're also going to pay $100 for that, for the nice one, and it's going to do whatever. But Harley now has the normalizing of the temperature, which is one of the biggest difficulties. Now, there's tech for other things too, but like that's where I'm at. The only reason I can put this show out on the side with a full-time job is because I've gone ahead and invested in technology that automates things I would have had to do manually. So I'm watching the levels here now. There's no way I could go in and re-listen to this episode and level it every single time at every single channel. There's no way I could do it. So this tool allows me to bring that consistency that Joseph was talking about. So I would say number one when you're starting something is, and then we'll get back to coffee, is you have to understand it because you don't even know what to normalize yet. Don't go out and buy a bunch of gear that you don't know how to use because you don't know why it matters, go out and understand it and do the whirly pop stuff and then grow out of your gear. Get the camera and use it to the best of its ability. And then when my kids come to me, the first time my daughter comes to me, she's been taking pictures on this little point and shoot. She's really interested, Cecilia. When she comes to me and specifically says, hey, Dad, I'm having trouble taking pictures when it's dark. And I look at her pictures and she's limited by the technology. She's getting a new camera.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm buying her a new one.
Yep.
But until then, she needs to maximize what she's using. Yep.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about coffee is because whatever change you make is going to improve your cup. If your goal is to have a good cup. So like if you buy beans from Joseph and you roast them in a Whirly Pop at home, even if you're not that good, it's still going to be better than like 90% of the coffee you're going to buy.
Absolutely.
At a store. And so like, or if you, let's say you buy beans from Joseph and you get really good at roasting, but you don't have a good grinder. Well, still, like you're going to be better than 95% of the coffee that you buy at a store. So that just makes a huge difference.
That's the story you were telling, was that each upgrade you do will exponentially make a difference, is what you're saying, Harley.
Yeah, man. All the way down to the kind of water that you put in your coffee. I mean, like, there's a company called Third Wave Water that makes mineral packets that are designed to, you put it in distilled water, and it's supposed to give you the perfect mineral ratio for your coffee, depending on what you're going for. And like, that stuff can make a huge difference, let alone your grind size, let alone your brew method.
Yeah, and people talk about the cost of good things. I mean, let's talk about the cost of bad things. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm at a point now in my life where I would rather do without it than do the better one. You know, and I'm learning. So, like, I still do the bad coffee from time to time, but I'm going to be switching. Oh, you know, I'm going to be switching over as I'm educated. Hopefully this educates folks as well. Yep. Now, are you guys saying that they're going to need to – are they going to have to do that stuff with your coffee? Do they have to do it themselves? Do we have to teach all these people?
No. They don't have to. So there's – someone can
– people want to buy from you. Our fifth group are consumers.
Yeah, people want to buy. You can buy. Yeah. You can buy coffee. Of course. You can buy coffee, roasted coffee.
What do they have to do? Oh, you sell roasted coffee.
We sell roasted coffee.
Okay.
So we and a lot of other people sell roasted coffee.
They sell a bunch of Whirly Pops, you know?
This is a golden age of coffee. So there are any number of places that have subscriptions now. And one point, subscription.
Wait, hold on. We're talking about you, though. We want to sell your stuff.
So
forget those guys.
Okay. So we have.
Who are these people?
I don't know. There are a lot of people. So
we want to sell meaningful coffee and serve coffee.
No, just serve coffee.
Do you have a subscription?
So I don't have the capacity. So here's what happened. I started Meaningful Coffee and I sold like way too much. And I was making coffee in my Whirly Pop for like hours. And so at this point, I don't want to do this all weekend. Like, this is not fun for me.
Yep.
And so I've had to dial back Meaningful at this point. I basically roast coffee for my church. I roast it for myself. And then occasionally, like holidays, stuff like that, I'll do it a little bit. So I just sell by the bag at a limited quantity right now because I just don't have the infrastructure to support it.
So here's the beauty is that coffee, because the cost structure is where they are, you can do a lot of things on your own, or you don't have to do a lot of things on your own at a cost point you're already spending money on. So if people are already spending $4 for a cup of coffee, that's a pretty high dollar amount for a cup of coffee.
If they have that franchise habit.
If that franchise habit. Yeah. Even if they're used to spending K-cup kind of money, that's a lot of money for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, it is.
So most people won't even buy one. They'll put two in their cup.
Honestly, I don't know if we're calculating by cost. So when we've done the K-cups, I think what it is like we're out of coffee. You buy a bunch of it, and then you... You know what I mean? Which is just a budgeting issue, but I think they kind of hide the cost pretty well. Because it's like, $25 for like a ton of them.
Yep.
But I don't know that I've ever done the per cup cost.
You should do the per cup cost. It's high. And most people don't go, I got one K-cup. Well, my cup is half full. I'm putting another one in.
My cup is half full.
Yeah. So they'll go two. And so, again, it depends on where you're going, but most K-cup coffees, if you do the math, you'll find that you're spending more than you would spend on a high-end, your local cafe coffee.
All right, so here's my goal. I want to spend $500 to become a coffee drinker.
Oh, that's we can it, do though. That.
No more.
Easily.
No more. Easy. No, here's the deal. That's it. That's the first investment. I won't do another until the second. Here's what I want to do. I want to have the setup where I can enjoy it. Here's the other thing I want to do. I want cream in mine and sugar, but I want to make it. I want to make actual homemade cream for my coffee that doesn't hurt the profile.
Are you going to put a cow in the backyard?
Don't look at me.
You're going to have a goat? You're going to have a goat yet. In the backyard?
I don't know yet, but okay. I'm just saying, picture this. You have the whiskey, you got the ice cubes that are circular, spherical, or whatever. You got all these different things. That's not what I want to do. What I want to do is coffee. I'm gonna have my electric kettle.
Yep.
I'm gonna have my fresh French press.
Maybe.
Which, maybe pour over. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe pour over. I'll have to get some advice from you guys. And then it's gonna go into my Ember mug.
Yeah.
Because I want the temperature to be 139.
Of course.
I'm a 139 guy. 141 is for anarchists, I think. So I want to do that, and then I want some sort of something to go in there at times when I feel like it. Maybe a little thing that drops in that melts. I don't know, something.
So you're giving us a $500 budget?
Yeah. What do I get?
Harley.
You two, personal shoppers.
Yeah, my first question.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like a maybe like a marshmallow type thing, but it's not a marshmallow. It's like a cream.
I'm going to move on from this mellow. From this cream stuff that's absurd.
I'm doing the Jim Halpert look in the camera, and I want you guys to mark it right now. 54 minutes, 32 seconds. That's happening.
Yeah.
And Harley's just not in.
Yeah, moving on from that. The first question I have for you, Jeremy, is do you – stop it. Do you think you will want to sort of manually make your coffee in the morning, or would you prefer a machine?
I have 13 minutes in the morning where I'm real groggy, and I don't want to fight my way out of that 13 minutes. I want to enjoy that 13 minutes. I walk in my office. I kind of look around, sit down, kind of usually sad for a minute or two, and then I look around and I go, wow, I'm really blessed. The Lord's been good to me, and I kind of shake out of it. Then I chug a bunch of water medicinally.
That's right.
And I look around and I go, I should do something about this mess. Okay. And then I stand up and I go, I got to go to the bathroom. So then I go to the bathroom and I wash my hands and I come back out. Hands are still wet because I always forget to put a towel in there. And then I come back out and I go, I wonder if there's coffee. That 13 minutes leads up to another 7 minutes where I'm going to sit there and I'd like to sit in this beautiful, probably walnut butcher block workstation. And I want to sit there and I want to make an incredible photographable cup of coffee for myself.
Okay.
I don't want to be too specific, but that's generally what I do.
I'd start here.
I want to have a bar in here for coffee.
This is your first purchase, in my opinion. This exact grinder, the Brazza Encore.
Brazza Encore. And this is Joseph's grinder.
Yeah, it's the one I don't use anymore because I have a commercial grinder. But
it's my old scrub
I can bring in.
Whirly
yes.
Pop. Yeah, got it. Okay.
This is a great entry-level grinder.
I don't like how you said entry level.
Well, this entry level grinder is going to be over $100. So,
tons of budget left.
That's a lot for most people. Now, if you want a fancier one, I've got a Fellow Ode, which is.
This is directly coming out of my finances for my future. So, I'm going to move some money to the present. Okay.
The Fellow Ode is about $300. It's going to look, I think it looks a little better. It's going to grind about just as good. Okay. Maybe a little better.
So, $200 for the look?
Well, there's other features, whatever. But. Okay. You know, if you want, Jeremy, you like expensive things. If you want the expensive one.
I think you're miscategorizing
that. If you want the expensive one, I'm not. If you want the expensive one, the Fellow Ode would be a good option there.
I like high standards and being thrifty. That's the goal.
From there, you're going to want a kettle. You can get an electric kettle for like $30.
I'm sorry. There was a little bit of a misspeak there. That
I was still
a bit
saying,
of a range.
Yeah, I meant $30. I have a $30
Wait, here's
electric
the deal.
Kettle.
I don't want one that says... It's hot now. I want one that tells me what the temperature is.
Why?
Because the temperature matters from what I understand.
Not when you brew it.
Is that true? Joseph, fight him.
That's true. Nope. He's right on that.
Okay, so we're going to get one that's just hot.
Yeah, you don't need... If you think you're going to be a tea drinker, that's when temperature matters, but...
Oh, because you can over-extract tea.
But if you're not going to drink tea, you want boiling water for your coffee when you brew it.
Great. That saves me some bucks because you... Not 300, but 30. Okay, yeah. Cool. So I'm at... I think it would be unwise for me to buy the other one, it sounds like.
You only need this one.
Okay.
Unless you want good photos.
So I'm at that's tough. That's yeah. tough. All right. So we're looking at we've got a grinder for $150-ish. We've got a kettle for around $30-ish.
Yeah.
What else? Joseph, what else should I be thinking about? I've got my Ember mug already.
Yep. So the next would be decide you're gonna have to roast it. And you already talked about you can get your air roaster.
Can I get up in those 7 minutes and roast it myself? Is
no,
that a thing?
but if you spent 20 minutes on a weekend and roasted,
do I roast for the week?
You can you can roast for a week, maybe even two. Yeah.
Is it going to smell amazing in here?
Yes.
No. No.
Okay, we have a disagreement, Joseph. But why do you think yes?
I think coffee smells great when you roast it, but you're probably going to roast it outside. But
No. I'll probably roast it in this room without the windows open.
I roast in my kitchen. I've learned to like the smell. I think the smell of roasted coffee is very much a, is something that you grow into.
The smell of sawdust and the smell of like laser engraving burning of plastic is something I really like. So will I like this?
Yeah, probably. My wife hates it. Like my wife hates it, and it doesn't smell like coffee. When you brew coffee, it's a totally different smell when you roast it. It's,
okay.
My wife describes it as like burnt grass. So it's okay. It's a whole new whole
she's
new smell.
She's got a good smell palette for complaining about smells. She's pretty good. She's pretty accurate. I've never heard descriptions that are better than hers. She's very on point about those descriptions. Yeah. She's got a good palette for smells.
Yeah, and also I bring
up very descriptive, and I love it.
Yeah, if you had $500 back to my point, you could get the air popper, roast, buy your own green beans.
I thought I was really spending up here, and you said only. You guys are killing me here.
Yeah. Your most expensive thing will be, depending on how you brew your coffee, the grinder. And you got some great advice. Get the great burr grinder first. And that's a very good
burr
grinder.
What about the pour over versus French press? What are we doing there? What's the whole jam there? Is this an eternal debate?
You can get both for, oh, good. For you know, $25.
But why? Yep. Why? What is the deal?
Like it's a variety. It's a variety. You like it all. So, for example, they're so inexpensive.
Flavor differences?
Yeah. 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 Some people, yeah.
Yeah,
really?
The
biggest difference is a traditional pour-over uses a paper filter, and then there's also two different ways of brewing happening. When you brew in a French press, it's an immersion brew, and so the coffee and the water are all just, like, mixed together. And then that uses metal, and so there's oil in that coffee that's going to transfer into your cup. When you use a pour-over, traditionally you use a paper filter, and that paper filter is going to pull that oil out of your cup, so it's going to taste what people describe as cleaner, and that just depends on what you like. From there, pour over, it's not an immersion brew because the coffee is passing over the beans. And so you just get it to different
Relax,
different
it's not
flavors.
An emergency. You know what I mean?
Stop. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so Joseph, you made a face, not at Harley, but you were thinking of something when he said it's a little cleaner. What did you think of?
So I've had this conversation before. So for me, I like French press coffee,
me
personally.
Too.
And so some people say, well, you like oily coffee. Other people say you like or the flavors.
Yeah, there's, you're a kitten kicker. You know, people get so dramatic about these things.
And to me, also, to me, when I taste something that goes like a, not all pour overs, but
what
if
are
I
you talking about oil? Where's this oil come from?
Part of the bean. Well, part of the bean. When you brew the bean, there'll be some oils with it.
It's not
it.
From the metal.
No. The bean has oils on the bean. It's
just
part
from,
of the, there's
just from life.
Yeah, it's just part of the bean. I like sometimes if coffee's over roasted, it'll be really oily. And so, like, you've probably seen really dark coffee.
Yeah.
Has, like a lot of oil on it. That's not traditionally good. You don't want that. But coffee
it's more
has.
More of a soot at that point.
Yeah.
Those are the oils that have been in the bean that contribute to the flavor that have had enough time to come to the exterior part of
but
the
But they've
bean.
Been exposed to the exterior, so that's kind of the question mark.
Yes, and they'll start to get bad. And they'll start to get bad. So part of the freshness process is around oxidation. Once coffee is roasted, it starts to oxidize and stale. Oxidation equals getting stale. Now, ironically, and Harley will be able to talk more about this than I will, when you first roast coffee, it's not as good as it will be in 2 or 3 days. Because
that's one of my favorite things. I've heard stories where people are like, yeah, I was at this place and they roasted the coffee right in front of me and then brewed it and gave it to me. And it was the best coffee I've ever had. And I'm like, well, technically, if you would have waited like 2 days, it would have been better.
Yeah, you push your glasses up.
Yeah. But I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. But yeah, coffee.
Well, good for you with your best cup of coffee ever. Will Ferrell walking in. And congratulations, you did it. Have you seen that? There's a movie where he's in New York. It says best cup of coffee in the world. And he walks in. He goes, best cup of coffee in the world. Congratulations, you did it. He thought it was an award. And so, yeah, that's Harley whenever somebody says they just got their beans roasted right in front of them.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, that's me being pretentious.
Well, yeah. I think you have to be a little pretentious at some point with this business. This time has flown by. I think we're going to have to get together again at some point here. But we are really out of time on this. That's crazy because I'm sure you have lots more to talk about.
Yeah, well, you haven't even answered your how do you spend your $500.
Yeah, well, I think we can wrap on that because it's about me. But so we're looking at the grinder. We're looking at the what sounds like a pour over and a French press aren't too hot to grab both.
Yeah, you'd want both.
Yeah. It's you can buy two or three. That's the beauty of it. They're only $25 bucks each.
You might,
a lot of money.
You might
you
want AeroPress for when you go camping.
So, So when people send me this, I've been doing instant. There's some Peruvian instant coffee or something I've been pouring in for when I go camping because it's so transportable. But I would like to hear, because we're taking quite a few trips this year, so I'd like to hear how that works as well. But yeah, so we've got the grinder, we've got the pour over, we've got the French press, we've got the cooker.
Yeah, you can buy a roaster and beans, and you're set.
Jeremy, do you think you would actually roast?
Yeah.
Okay, then yeah.
I'm concerned about the time. I need to know that it's somewhat automated. So I'm concerned a little bit about...
It's not automated.
Nope. I'm concerned about my ability to get in without getting into the roaster you have. Because that's a little more automated. That's a timer. It's not even that.
No, you still have to watch it. And coffee is roasting coffee at scale as you use the same beans. And you can.
So I might pick it up after you roast it.
Yeah, that's probably what you want to do. And then if you want to use that other budget, I might buy a Mocha Master, which is a really nice...
I was going to say the same thing.
Tell me about it, Joseph. What's a Mocha Master?
So Mocha Master, it's a brewing device. If you just want to wake up in the morning and have a machine do the pour over for you, that's the Mocha Master.
Like a coffee pot?
Yes, but much nicer.
Okay. Okay, so much nicer. We'll try to do that. Maybe I'll run this by you. We have other things we've got to get to, unfortunately, with our today. No, we're okay, you said?
Oh, no. I thought you were saying I have other things I need to buy before I buy Mocha Master, which is not true. You need to just buy a Mocha Master.
Okay. All right. Well, I have some shopping to do. It has been absolutely wonderful talking to you guys. I definitely want to do a part two. Today just happened to be one of those very, very packed scheduled days. We would normally record a second episode on the spot, and there's lots to talk about, but I've really appreciated this discussion. I think what I want to do, Joseph, if I can put the ball in your court, and this can be as small or as large of a contribution as you want, I'd love to have you be a contributor on the stories page for Renaissance about just the story of coffee and the story of your company and what you're doing. And then I would love to work out how we can sell in our shop. We'd like to, maybe I'll photograph and film some of your products and do some different things that you can keep and get you some social media type content. And that'd just be on me. I'm happy to do it. And it'll be lots of fun. But if you have a post for people who are, I'm volunteering you, so you may or may not have time to do this. But if we're able to pull this off, I would love to have a page that people who are interested in this topic in the future as they listen can go through and listen and learn and or watch. You know, they can listen to the episode and maybe read as they watch, and maybe we'll link some of these things and stuff. But ultimately, I'd love to sell your product. I think it's more special than people realize. It's such an overlooked space. You know, everybody gets coffee, but nobody gets it.
Yep. I'm more than happy to work with you on that. And there's another side of the story, which is coffee can have a purpose, meaning we can do a lot of impact with the farmers you were talking about before. And that's a whole nother topic. And fair trade, buying coffee at a fair price solves a lot of problems. Being able to contribute to people who are down there working with people is another thing, which
are they English speaking at all? Any of the folks you work with?
Some. Some are fortunately bilingual, so they can understand me.
Yeah, unfortunately, I only speak English, and it's poorly. You missed your opportunity, Harley, earlier. You said, what's your word about going fast?
Fastly,
and then there was another one that you passed over that you said correctly, unfortunately. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. We'll have to listen back.
Fastly drives me nuts. It should be a word.
Yeah, like Harlan's wilt.
Right.
Yeah.
Harlan's got it right, dude.
Harlan said,
or shan't.
On will not. Yeah, Harlan goes, what are we, on won't, where are we conjugating, Dad? What's won't? What's the O from? Is it? It's in front of the N. And he's like, it should be won't. And I'm like, I'm with you, bud. So hilarious.
Shall not.
So anyway, hold on. Let me try to find it. There we go. There's the Harlan soundbite about won't. Okay, y'all, thank you so much for coming in. We'll definitely schedule it. I have a lot of ambitions around our conversation. The farthest reaching of the ambitions is I would love to go out. Harley, you would of course go.
Be a blast.
It would be a blast, and we could absolutely record with them. I would love to record. We could record in Spanish or whatever. I don't care. I'd love to go out and meet them and do some stuff. That's a long shot right now, but the blog post and contributor writing would be really cool.
We can do that.
And definitely get up on the shop, and I'll try to get our artists involved in beautifully displaying your coffee. So any last words? Harley, I'll give it to you first, and then our honored guest will close us out.
Yeah. Give good coffee a shot if you haven't. It matters. It affects the suppliers. It affects, your personal tastes. And, try to make your morning coffee a little more meaningful.
Harley, can you give them the actual pragmatic next step if they say, yes, I agree with that? I'd like to do that. What's the next step?
Simply, at the simplest point, is buy coffee from a high-quality shop at a minimum.
Yep.
So you can call Joseph, go to his website, you can go to your local coffee shop, whatever. Just buy coffee from a high quality spot.
And then brew it like you normally do.
Yep.
And you sell whole bean?
We do sell whole bean. We can.
You don't need a grinder or whatever.
Yes. We can grind it, but the first step in improving your coffee quality is getting a grinder.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
All right, Joseph, what's something you want to make sure that we land on?
Yeah. So as Harley said, enjoy it. There's a great big world of coffee out there, a lot of different taste profiles. There's more than what you experience at a truck stop. And spend the time. It's not as much money as you think. If you're spending money on a K-Cup already, or you're spending money on truck stop,
and you're burying it in creamer because it tastes terrible. And
you can either buy the beans for about the same amount of money, really, when you do the math, or if you roast your own, it's a lot cheaper. And give yourself 90 days. And you will, once you start tasting what different regions and roast profiles take like, you will never have thought, the world of coffee will open up to you, and you'll understand a better appreciation of it.
Oh, that's awesome. And I can't wait to talk again. We didn't talk about the scales and all the amazing things about the different flavor profiles and things like that. Maybe we'll throw that up on the site as well. Yeah. Maybe do some of the social stuff there where we put it up. But what an awesome, like, really cool. There's so many artists, so many craftsmen involved. There's so much technology and thinkers. It's such a neat space that I'm excited to learn more about. So thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you soon, like in a minute when I stop recording. Thanks, guys.